Who was Saul Alinsky, and why does it matter to modern politics? Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And right now we welcome back to the program Bill Federer, who is a best-selling author. He's also a widely sought-after speaker, and he's even been cited by the U.S. Supreme Court. His website is AmericanMinute.com. Bill, welcome to the program, or welcome back, rather.
Jerry, great to be with you.
Okay, so who was Saul Alinsky, and why does it matter? Maybe you can answer the second question first.
Sure. Saul Alinsky was a community organizer in Chicago, and Hillary Clinton did her senior thesis at Wellesley College on Saul Alinsky. And the title is There's Nothing But the Fight. That was her paper. And several books that he wrote, Reveille for Radicals and Rules for Radicals. And then our president was a community organizer in Chicago in his early career. And that is where Saul Alinsky was. And the president worked with the Saul Alinsky people there. And Saul Alinsky rode around with Al Capone's hitmen, Frank Nitti, in Chicago, and saw how all you had to do was kill a few people, smash a few windows, and the whole neighborhood would submit to the mob and pay extortion protection money. Now, a little background before I get into Saul Alinsky might
sure.
be helpful.
Yeah.
And that's Machiavelli. So the most common form of government in world history is a king, Pharaoh, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, Tsar. So there's this gravitational pull for power to want to concentrate. And from the beginning of the Nimrod and the Tower of Babel all the way up to the King of England, power would concentrate in these empires would get bigger and bigger and bigger, clearly with a global conquest in mind. So I've actually written several books. The recent one's called Rise of the Tyrant, where I go through the world's history and I plot this out for the reader. And it's a hierarchical system, so when you get a king, when you're friends with the king, you're more equal. You're not friends with the king, you're less equal. You're an enemy of the king, you're dead. It's called treason. And so, and then another point I bring out is that communism and socialism is nothing more than monarchy. You think communism and socialism, monarchy? Right. Every communist country and every socialist country has a dictator. Stalin, Pol Pot, Ho Chi Minh, Castro, Mao Zedong.
Well, certainly every communist country.
People forget that Nazi is National Socialist Workers' Party, and it had a leader named Hitler. The Union of the Soviet Socialist Republic, right, the USSR, was socialist. And even in 1940, Franklin Roosevelt said the Soviet Union is run as a dictatorship, as absolute as any dictatorship in the world. And so it's just a monarchy makeover, and the Communist Party members are the new royalty. They get to live in the nice houses and have special shops and special treatment before the law, and the people are the peasants. You might have a college student that says, wait a second, I thought in socialism and communism, everybody owns everything equally. It's like, oh, okay, who decides who lives in the nice house and who lives in the dumpy house? Somebody in the government dictates those things. Well, whoever ultimately dictates those things is the dictator. And so we see that whether you call the dictator a prime minister, a chairman, a president, the name doesn't matter. The function is this person is in charge. And if you're in his inner circle, you're more equal. And if you're not, you don't get that treatment. And if you're an enemy, you'll get sued and audited and so forth.
Okay,
so
Saul Alinsky.
So we see two individuals before I get to him. One is Machiavelli, lived 500 years ago in Italy. Italy was a bunch of city-states, Venice, Genoa, Naples, Florence, Siena, and they always fought. And Machiavelli thought if one prince could control all of Italy, it would stop this infighting. So he writes a book called The Prince, where he advocates the ends justifies the means. The end of one prince controlling all of Italy is such a good end, because it'll stop the infighting between these kingdoms, that any means necessary to get there is justified. Lie, cheat, steal. So if a prince conquers a city, the people would hate him. But if the prince pays criminals to kill cows and burn barns and create crisis and terror, the people will cry out for help. The prince will come in, kill the very criminals he bribed. Nobody would know the better for it, and they'd all praise the prince as a hero. So it's good marketing. You create the need and fill it. You go around the back of the house and set it on fire, and then you go around the front of the house and sell them a fire extinguisher, and they'll pay anything for it and thank you for being there. So it's called Machiavellianism, where you create or capitalize on a crisis to consolidate control. So this is the idea that power wants to concentrate. It's like a gravitational pull, and Machiavelli noticed that, hey, let's speed it along by intentionally creating the crises. Well, this inspired somebody named Hegel, George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. He lived in Prussia, a German province, And when Napoleon conquered Prussia so easily, afterwards the king said, we can't let that happen again. We need to strengthen the state. So Hegel provided the philosophical background. He said, the state is God walking on earth. Hegel came up with a way to concentrate power into the hands of a king, and it's called Hegelian dialectics. It's a triangle. One corner is a thesis. The opposite corner is an antithesis or antithesis. And the top corner is a synthesis. It sounds complicated, but it's not. You start off, you create an antithesis. You create a problem that's real bad. And then everybody's happy to settle for your answer that's half as bad. And then that becomes the new thesis starting point. Then you create another problem that's real bad, and everybody's happy to settle for your answer that's half as bad. You do this over and over again until you move the people from ruling themselves in a republic to surrendering all their freedoms back to a dictator. Now, this inspired somebody named Karl Marx. Karl Marx applied this Hegelian dialectic to politics and says, how do you create an antithesis? How do you create a real bad problem? You send in agitators, organizers, agent provocateurs, provoking agents. Their goal is to create a really bad domestic crisis so that there's riot and random bloodshed and killing, and then everybody is motivated to surrender their freedoms to some strong leader that promises to restore order. So 45 countries felt the communist dictators this way. And you would have the proletariat organized against the bourgeois, or the organized the poor against the rich, the blacks against the whites, the Catholics against the Protestants, the Muslims against the Christians, the Hutus against the Tutsis in the Congo and Rwanda. They really don't care who the two sides are, and they really don't care what the issues are. They just want to go in, find the people who have grievances, find the people who have been wronged, the ones that have an axe to grind it, and you stir them up.
Okay.
Riot.
All right. So we see Machiavelli, we see Hegel, we see Karl Marx. Does that lead us now to Saul Alinsky?
Right.
Okay.
So I do throw in, it works best if the people are not Christian. Even Napoleon said religion is what keeps the poor from murdering the rich. So if you have Christians that are poor, they'll just forgive. But if you get rid of Christianity, then you've got raw human passion and you can stir them up. So here's Saul Alinsky. He's in Chicago. He rides around with Al Capone's hitman, Frank Nitti. And he sees how all you have to do was just kill a few people, smash a few windows, and the whole neighborhood would submit to the mob and pay extortion protection money.
Okay, now wait. If somebody listening to this had never even heard of Saul Alinsky prior to this, he might think he was Al Capone's nephew or something like that. Whereas the outward trappings of this man, he's like in favor of social justice. You see photographs with him, and there might be a Catholic priest around him or something like that. You know, almost like a civil rights leader ahead of his time, that kind of thing. It's not this other kind of side, this underbelly of Saul Alinsky that you're bringing out. And all, what you're saying is all true, by the way. I'm just, pointing out the other side would say, what? Most people don't know about this Frank Nitti stuff. By the way, it comes up in Hillary's America, the movie by Dinesh D'Souza, which I've already seen. Interesting stuff.
Well, yeah, in his book, Rules for Radicals, he talks about going into a Polish community in Chicago, and he says, if I would have told them that I was pro-abortion, they would have chased me out. But I would get involved in their soup kitchens and in their social benefit projects and get to develop relationships with them. And only after I developed the relationship would I let them know that I was pro-abortion. And by that time, they were softened up to my views and I could stay and then organize them. And then he talked about how it was evangelism in reverse. He says churches do this. They'll put on some concert, and they'll get people to come, and they'll develop relationships, and they gradually pull them into church. He just did it in the opposite direction. But
pushing them away from church. He did not believe.
Right, pull them away from church.
He did not believe in Jesus and so forth.
Yeah, so basically a community organizer is the opposite of a pastor. A pastor wants to organize the community to bring them closer to God. Saul Alinsky says you organize the community to create crises to bring change. So Saul Alinsky says the organizer's first job is to create the issues or the problems. The organizer must rub raw the resentments of the people of the community. An organizer must stir up dissatisfaction and discontent. The organizer must fan the latent hostilities of many of the people to the point of overt expression. the community organizer, polarizes the issue and leads his forces into conflict. He must search out controversy, for unless there is controversy, the people are not motivated enough to act. So here we have this person saying that you have to create racism. You have to have class warfare. You have to have the fighting the police and then so forth. Even Castro says the revolution needs the antithesis. If enemies are not there, you have to create them. You need to have this tension line so that you can stir people up to riot.
Never let a crisis go to waste.
Never let a good crisis go to waste. That's exactly the term. Now, one of the things I found interesting in Saul Alinsky's philosophy is he says you can defeat Christians very easily because they won't do whatever it takes to win. In his mind, Saul Alinsky says that your end is your good. And so anything that accomplishes your end is justified. So you can lie, cheat, steal, murder, rape, anything. Anything's okay as long as you're reaching your end. He says Christians won't do whatever it takes to win because they're limited by things called morals.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So you know, let me just stop you for a second. Let me stop you for a second. I mean, it's an amazing, frankly, an American tragedy that you have this girl who grew up, and I'm talking about Hillary Clinton, with Christian values, Methodists and so forth, and then she bought into this stuff, hook, line, and sinker, and today, you know, she's so pro-abortion, she's, you know, it would seem to me corrupt in all kinds of different ways. I mean, even Donald Trump calls her Crooked Hillary and so forth, but not without reason. Anyway, it's so tragic that she would be willing to abandon the Christian ethic, frankly, for this ends justifies the means. And the irony is, what was the first thing she did of a political nature? She was working on the impeachment committee against Richard Nixon, from which he was fired, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah, and also with the Black Panthers, but those different groups that...
She helped to get a rapist or an alleged rapist, because I guess he wasn't convicted. She helped him get off of that charge. That also is brought out in that Hillary's America. Bill, we only have 2 minutes left. What else do we need to know about Saul Alinsky? Who did he dedicate his major work, Rules for Radicals, published in 1971? Who did he dedicate that to? It was mentioned by Ben Carson, and I think that's important.
Who rebelled and won his own kingdom, Lucifer. So here you have a book dedicated to Lucifer, written by Saul Alinsky, and it is a blueprint for politics of destruction, of creating a crisis so that you can have people give up their freedoms. Now, a republic is the people are king, ruling through their servants called representatives, their public servants. And so when somebody steps on the flag or burns the flag, what they're saying is, I don't want to be the king anymore. And so here the Saul Alinsky movement is wanting to transition away from the people ruling themselves and letting power get concentrated back into a dictator. And the way you do it is you have to create crises, overload the system, and so people surrender their freedoms. It's a very effective strategy. It goes back to, you know...
Well, wait, we only have a minute left. Can I?
France said the same thing.
Yeah, 1 minute left. Can I ask you this? Ben Carson... at the Republican National Convention, mentioned Hillary and Satan in this particular context. Can you clarify that? About what was Ben Carson talking about?
Right. Ben Carson was contrasting the Democrat candidate and the Republican candidate and talked about how Hillary Clinton is a Democrat candidate, and she did do her senior thesis at Wellesley College on Saul Alinsky. And Saul Alinsky did dedicate his book to Lucifer. And so you have one person running for the president of the United States that follows that type of reasoning. The other one has announced that he will put on the Supreme Court people like Anton Scalia, and it was Trump, obviously, and
people
he picked
like
as his running mate Mike Pence, who governor of Indiana, and the first things out of Mike Pence's mouth was, I am a Christian, I am a conservative, I'm a Republican, in that order.
Yeah, that was great. All right, well, we're basically out of time, but people can get more information at AmericanMinute.com. Bill Federer, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
All right, and may God bless America. Bye-bye now.